Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind, and we are here to host you for the next 1.5 hours. We start by offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and indeed to Swami's lotus feet, because today we're going to continue our discussion about Padasevanam, that is, worship offered to the feet of the Lord. And we spoke last week about Padasevanam as we understand it when we used to come and sit for darshan, the opportunity to have Swami's Pada Namaskar, the opportunity to offer service directly to Swami's lotus feet. But definitely Swami says much more about Padasevanam than just that, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about this week. But before that, let me ask Arvind to join me. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, as you beautifully summed it up, last week we were focusing on the actual Pada Namaskar, worshipping Swami's feet. And I think we moved the discussion ahead by wondering how on earth we do that now, because those beautiful physical feet are not visible to our physical eyes. And that is where we got in that insight that pining for the Lord's feet, pining for Padasevanam, is as good, if not more good, than the act of Padasevanam itself, than the act of pressing his feet itself. Because many have been those who have touched his feet, but there have been a few who, without touching his feet, have found the ultimate in life by just pining to touch those feet. So therefore, one way of practicing Padasevanam in our lives is pining for the Lord's feet more than actually touching the Lord's feet. That is where I think we had concluded last week. So, dear listeners, we will be taking it forward with two more possible ways that we have been inspired with by Bhagwan's love and Bhagwan's grace via Bhagwan's discourses, of course, and we will share that with you. But before we begin this week's discussion on the two other ways, we would like to have an introduction by our beloved Bhagwan himself. This is from his discourse dated...
This is from 1986, the 8th of October. But interestingly, as you said, you know, not everybody has the opportunity to do Padasevanam. That's precisely the point with which Swami himself starts this discourse clip. So let's listen to Swami, and of course, as we said, we'll take the discussion forward from there.
Padasevanam. Next is Padasevanam. Idi andariki labhyamayyetundi kaadu. This is not a chance which everyone can get.
Labhyamainappatikini edo oka vidhamainatundi okka laukikamainatundi drishtito padasevanam chestu raavachunu.
Even if one gets an opportunity, only thinking of the worldly things and in a worldly way, one will be doing Pada Seva and massaging the feet of the Lord.
Kani ee seva yandu tana yokka manasunu ankitam gavinchi,
merging his mind while doing this seva,
samasta srishti kudanu ee padamale pramanamu pradhanam anetuvanti reetiga bhavinchi,
thinking that for the entire creation, these feet alone are responsible,
ee kevalam brahma kadigina padamuga bhavinchi,
thinking that these are the feet which were washed by Brahma himself,
samasta jagattunu kudanu akraminchinatundi padamuga visheshinchi,
believing that these are the feet which have occupied the entire world and permeated the entire world,
sarvatra vyapinchinatundi yokka divyamainatundi yokka charanamule ee yokka charanamulanu visheshinchi,
fully believing that these are the feet which have occupied every inch of
the sevaye na sadhanamane bhavinchinatundi Lakshmi.
It is only Lakshmi who taught in this particular fashion and offered seva.
Pada sevayandu Lakshmi tana yokka janmamu sarthakam gavinchukunnadi.
It is Lakshmi who sanctified her life through Pada Seva.
So that was the clip, right? As we said, it's from 8th of October 1986, a Dashara discourse. In fact, that discourse, Swami goes on to speak about each of the paths and gives the example which Swami usually gives for each of those paths and describes why that person is worshipped for that particular path.
Even before he gives the example of Lakshmi, Swami makes one point. He says that it's no use of sitting at the Lord's feet with worldly desires.
Right.
You know, because these are the feet that can grant you the ultimate. Why ask for anything less? Swami would often narrate the story of a man who goes to the Kalpavriksha, the wish-fulfilling tree, and asks for coffee powder. You know, and the way Swami would narrate it, there would be laughter everywhere. And Swami would say, man is being so foolish. he goes to God, who is the Kalpa Vriksha, who can fulfill every wish, and asks for some things that are so, you know, low and cheap. So that is a mistake we should not do. And Swami, when he said while doing Padaseva, you should have the objective of getting the ultimate for the entire Jagat, for the whole world. I remember, you know, very rarely we would get these chances, you know, of sitting and pressing Swami's feet, because you had to be lucky, in quotes, in a token system, get a front line, and then that day there had to be a tri session or a session where Swami calls in only the students. Then you get to sit in front, because I don't think during any of the public sessions in Prashanthi Nilayam Puttaparthi, at least from when I have been a student, there were any such guaranteed opportunities of Padaseva, unless Swami calls you in for an interview. So on one of those few occasions when I got to press his feet, I remember I was sitting and pressing his feet, and this precise thought came into my head, you know, that these are the feet that can grant you anything in the world. Oh my God, what amazing fortune it is. Ask, you know, ask. This is what I was thinking within. And, you know, Prem, as I was thinking, I'm not getting what to ask, because whatever I'm thinking of asking, it is feeling like it is too cheap to ask. So I remember I spent 5-10 minutes thinking, what is it, that one thing that I should ask, and keep asking it throughout this 15 minutes, 20 minutes or half an hour when I get to press his feet, what is it that I should ask for. So on that occasion, I remember I just thought of my parents, I thought of my loved ones. Of course, in that sense, I was a little narrow-minded. I thought of only these, but I just said, Swami, I don't know what to ask for, but let all these people whom I'm thinking about, let their hands also become one with my hands. And as I press your feet, let it be that they are also pressing your feet and getting this opportunity. That is what I ended up praying on that occasion. What I felt was, though Swami tells that when you are at the Lord's feet, you should not ask for any menial and low things, that he gives us that he tells us in order to elicit effort from our part. My experience has been that even though I have been filled with so many material desires and worldly desires, the very act of sitting at his feet has such an effect that it really makes you dumbfounded in terms of asking. I feel that is the glory of the Lord's feet, that is the glory of his presence, that automatically you are just tongue-tied, you are unable to ask for the lower things in the universe. And though it looks like I prayed for something loftier, I overcame my selfishness, I really feel it is not the case at all. That is the grandeur, that is the might, that is the glory of those redeeming feet.
Right, you know, when you talk about asking for the wrong thing, when you have this opportunity like this, I think we always have this, you know, that's why we say, don't be short-sighted, don't be narrow-minded, because we always have two issues, you know, with us. One is the issue at that moment, you know, some problem which is needs solution right away. And then you have your long-term, you know, desire of probably living with Swami or earning Swami's grace or whatever it is, you know, however you would like to define it. But I think what defines you as a person is, when given an opportunity, what will you ask for? You know, we have both examples, you know, because you were saying that just being in Swami's presence will give us that, you know, that wisdom to ask for the right thing. That's why we have these examples of, you know, somebody like Swami Vivekananda, who had other immediate issues to settle, but goes and asks for the right things when he goes in the presence of the Lord. And you have somebody like Dhruva, who goes for a place in his father's lap, but ends up asking for devotion. You know, examples such as this, but at the same time, we also have examples like somebody like Ravana or Hiranyakashipu, in front of whom the Lord appears, but they still ask for what they started off asking for. You know, something like, you know, I still want immortality, I still want to rule the world, I still want that nobody should be able to kill me. And even when the Lord says, no, that is not possible, ask for something else, even then you're actually using your crookedness,
yukti.
Right, to ask for something which is probably close to that. You know, no, men should not be able to kill me, or no man, no animal, no, neither up or down, something like that, you know. So I think it's so important, you know, we actually use a lot of our effort in trying to get the opportunity, but to prepare ourselves when we get the opportunity is, I think, equally important.
Absolutely, and I think that preparation should begin as soon as possible, because let's face it, Prem, you know, as students in the physical presence, we never know which is the day Swami will speak to us. I remember, I think he was your classmate, there was a certain Harish Raju, and he wanted to get a photograph signed from Swami, and he has held that photograph for 5 years, and he got it signed in his final year a few days before he was leaving for home. At the same time, I'm sure we have, you know, again another classmate of yours, I remember there was one certain Tara Shankar Chakravarti, and within a couple of weeks of joining the college itself, he was a recipient of Bhagwan's physical grace and Bhagwan's attention. Bhagwan spoke to him. So we never know when it is that moment will come, that moment of reckoning when you are given access to the Lord. That depends on so many factors which in this lifetime we may not be able to comprehend. But the Lord knows it. And that is why, since we don't know, since we are uncertain of when it will happen, what you said is so important, that we start preparation right now and be prepared for that moment. It's, you know, though it is not exactly in the same kind of note, it's like preparation for death, you know. Because it is said that at the time of death, the thoughts that are foremost in you are what will determine what is your next birth, whether you're going to get redeemed or whether you're going to get stuck in bondage. That's why it is said that those who leave their body taking the name of the Lord are most blessed. But as Swami says, at that moment, you never know when death is going to come. It's not as if I'll start practicing Namasmarana after 10 years because I'll die at 80. Because death can come right now, or death can come after 60 years. And the only way you can be prepared is if you are prepared every moment, which means preparation has to begin right now. So I feel, as you rightly said, we have to start preparing right now as to what is it that we will seek from the Lord when the Lord gives us this opportunity to seek from Him.
Absolutely, and I think probably before we move to what Swami says is the subtle idea behind doing Padasevanam, I'm reminded of another gross example of one person having this very, very deep desire to do worship to Swami's feet. It was narrated by, if I'm not wrong, Brother Vinay from Bangalore, the youth leader from Bangalore. You know, he had this opportunity, I mean, he had this prayer for a long time, many, many years, that he wants to do that traditional worship to Swami's feet whenever he had the opportunity. And we all know that during the Atirudram, Swami started speaking to him very often with regards to the program. So that's when he thought that, you know, one day Swami might call him and he might be alone with Swami in the interview room when he could ask for this opportunity. So, you know, he would have this bag. We've all seen that, you know, Swami will come call him for an interview. He would have a bag with him and he would go, and most often it will have the program related documents and all that. And in that bag, he used to always carry material which was used for doing Padaseva to Swami, Pada Puja to Swami. You know? So he used to have flowers, a kumkum and chandan and all that. And he used to have a small bottle which had water from Ganges. Because it's supposed to be very auspicious to do Abhishekam with water from Ganges, right? So he had that in a small container. So one fine day he had that opportunity. Swami told him, what do you want? And he immediately said, Swami, I want to do this one. Swami said, you can do, and you can imagine Swami's expression when this man starts pulling out a plate and flowers and everything from that bag, you know, and then he has the opportunity, he does that puja. So when he starts pouring this water from, you know, this container, Swami asks him, what is that? You know, where have you got water from? So he said, Swami, this is Gangajal, you know, it's water from the Ganges, all the way from Ganges. He said, Ganga is in my head, Swami said. Okay. So he was very thrilled that Swami is kind of revealing something like that. And he smiled and he touched Swami's feet. Swami said, looked at him and said, you don't believe me? And he said, really, Ganga is in my head. And Swami held his hand and made him touch the top of Swami's head. And to his surprise, it was wet.
Oh.
Swami said, see, Ganga is here. You don't have to put it in my feet.
Wow. That's a nice incident. And you know, I remember another incident where in Thrai Vrindavan, Swami decided, to our great good fortune, to explain each of these Navveda Bhakti Marga. And what we have completed so far, that is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, whatever Swami had narrated, I'm sure we have covered it in our satsang so far. When it came to Padasevanam, Swami said Padasevanam does not mean pressing of the Lord's feet. He said, you boys think that this boy, pointing to those who are in the front, you all think that they are lucky because they are doing Padaseva. Swami said, this is not Padaseva. And then Swami said, when the Lord comes in a human frame to bless the earth, you know, the Lord walks a path. Swami said, walking in the footsteps of the Lord, that is true Padasevanam. If you revere the feet of the Lord, then you also walk in the same footsteps that the Lord has walked. That is true Padasevanam. I think that is a beautiful definition, and I don't think we can get a more comprehensive definition than that.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, going back to what we've been saying from the beginning, you know, that each of these paths can also be seen as a progressive journey towards the Lord. If you look at it that way, as we said, you know, Shravanam Kirtanam is when you listen to the glory of the Lord, and then when you want to share it, it becomes Shravanam and Kirtanam. Then we spoke about Vishnu Smaranam as, you know, you are immersed in the thoughts of the Lord even when there is no audience for you to share, or, you know, a source for you to listen to. You internalize the thoughts of the Lord, you're always thinking about the Lord. And if you look at it that way, the most natural progression from there is to look and see, you know, what does the Lord want me to do? You know, what is the message? I think that will be the natural progression for a devotee. After having loved the Lord, and suppose I, there's my mother, I take a liking for there's my mother who I love a lot. I think that love will naturally seek expression in trying to obey what she says or do what she wants.
Correct.
And it's the same thing with the Lord. You know, now you've started falling in love with the Lord. The natural thing is to ask, okay, what will the Lord want? What will the Lord want me to do now? And that's what Swami is saying so beautifully, saying that Padasevanam is nothing but, you know, following that footsteps of the Lord that the Lord Himself mercifully leaves behind.
And in another discourse, I remember Swami narrating the example of Lord Krishna. That's right, beautiful.
Exactly. You know, Swami would say that Krishna would come and break those pots of butter and all that.
Curds. Huh?
And Swami would say that he would purposely dance on that butter or curd which is spilt and then run away. So Mother Yashoda would come and she'll see that Krishna is up to this mischief and he's broken this pot. But she will start following the footsteps of the Lord which Krishna purposely left, and she'll go and catch wherever he's hiding. And Swami would say that this is precisely what each one of you have to do. Because, you know, with having seen Swami, having enjoyed Swami's presence, now we all have become, you know, God mad or intoxicated with God. And now we are in search of Swami. And Swami says, the only way you can search for me is follow the footsteps I've left behind.
And, you know, you said that though there is no need to, see, actually Krishna being so intelligent, so divine, I don't think it is by mistake that this happens, because if he wanted to cover up his steps, if God wants to hide, then nobody can find him. But that is the love of the Lord. When the Lord descends on earth in a human frame, he tries his best to ensure that people identify him. And just like Krishna purposely dances in the butter and leaves behind footprints, in the same way, our Swami in his physical frame has left behind footprints in many ways. I think, see, it is impossible for us to recapitulate everything. But if we spend some time at least thinking at a physical level, you know, Swami has demonstrated so many things. You know, one thing I remember is somebody, I have never been to the interview room for an interview, but one of my Sai brothers, he was narrating that when Swami called them for the interview, just the act of entering the interview room itself was such a lesson for all of them, because Swami would stand, hold the door open, and you know, when somebody else wanted to replace Swami, Swami said, no, guests are God, you must come in, you know. They were all very touched because they are now entering the place to have a one-to-one conversation with God, and God is standing and saying, no, guests are God, you enter in. And this brother said that when they entered, the room was a little dark, so it was almost 20-30 of them entering, so interview room is also small, though it's amazing and miraculous how even 40-50-60 people get in over there. So when they all got in, this brother's father was standing near the light switch. He was about to put on the switch. Swami said, no, sir, stop, It's my duty, sir. Swami said that. So amazing. And he said, Swami went to the switch, put on the fan, put on the lights, and then sat. And during the course of the interview, one of the things that Swami said is, every time, as soon as the interview gets over, I switch off the light and fan because one must never waste energy. Only when the interview is there, I put it on. It is so amazing. See, because nowadays we have people who leave their air conditioning on half an hour before they enter because they want it pre-cooled. And, you know, that is the extent of bodily pampering that people do. While here is Swami, when he is calling people for interview also, he has not even left the fan on. Forget pre-cooling the room. He has not left the fan or light on. It's only after everything begins he puts it on. So they were saying that just the act of observing how Swami conducts whatever he conducts itself teaches us so many lessons. Lessons of frugal living, lessons of ceiling on desires, lessons of reducing wastage. My God.
Many, many things, you know, if you go into the details. See, I think in many ways that is the advantage an avatar gives all of us, you know, to look at him, to observe him, and to even learn these small, small things. You know, of course, in a discourse, Swami would say in Trayi Vrindavan when he's speaking to students some very small details. But in a discourse, Swami might not, in a public discourse, Swami might not go into details of such things about, you know, don't waste or this one. But when you observe Swami, you can learn that many, many times you would see, you know, Swami would take a letter. At least in Thrive we've seen that Swami would take a letter and Swami would read. Sometimes Swami would say, why have you taken such a big letter for, you know, four lines?
Page for four lines.
Such a big page for four lines. And Swami would tear out that, you know, that part of the letter which has not been used and give it back to the student. Or sometimes if half the letter is used, I've seen Swami tearing off that half and keeping that paper for, you know, he would give it to the boy who would give Swami a paper when Swami materializes Vibhuti. Swami would say it can be used for that. And, you know, these are things which Swami would constantly do, and unfortunately probably we wouldn't have taken note of it. Sometimes Swami would tell us, you know, that this is how we should do. For instance, when Swami would eat food, you know, we all have this habit of gargling our mouth after, you know, having had a lunch or dinner. Swami would always gargle his mouth with the water which is placed for him to drink in the glass and drink it. Swami said, why do you have to spit it out and waste that water? You know, it's
with that food,
right,
water. Huh?
To that detail Swami would go into when you talk about frugal living and not wasting.
Speaking of writing letters, recently, you know, I got this beautiful opportunity of photographing and scanning some of the letters that Swami wrote to various devotees, which they have so lovingly offered to our Radio Sai archives. And though I don't know how to read Telugu, one look at it, you know, you're amazed because there's not an inch of free space on the letter. Swami finishes the letter and even writes in the margin. He writes on both sides. Many times, you know, we lose a few letters because some of the letters are, you lose a few letters of the alphabet, I mean, because these letters have been written 40, 50 years before and they are a little frayed at the edges. And because they are frayed at the edges, the alphabet letters are missing. You know, they're gone because it's folded over. And, you know, I was literally thinking, Swami, you could have left some margins and written. They're very neat. They're very tidy. But not an inch of empty space, you know. Swami, you'll never see him. You'll never see him writing one-sided letters. Both sides it'll be filled. It is amazing because it is not the case with one letter or a few letters or a majority of the letters. This is the case with each and every letter. There is absolutely no paper wastage. In fact, some of the letters you can see, I think just as you said, as to what Swami would do with boys' letters, Swami has done with his own letters. He has completed a letter, the matter is complete. And so he has torn off the second half of the page, maybe to write it to some other, you know, devotee or use it in some other manner. That is the way Swami has led all his physical life. When he could command reams and reams of papers and notebooks, why did he have to do it? Other than, why did Krishna have to jump in the butter and walk? Other than leaving behind footsteps for us to follow, I see no other reason. And I feel this is such a beautiful opportunity of Pad Seva that he has left behind for us.
Yeah, right, absolutely. I mean, even as you're talking about letters, I'm reminded of, you know, the notebooks which we have, where Swami has written some of his Vahinis. Cover to cover in the literal sense, you know, when you write, when we use a notebook, we don't use that last cardboard part of the notebook, you know. We
in fact, I don't even use the first page.
First
we leave the first page blank.
And Swami has written even on that last, you know, which forms the cover of the book, even that till the end, every margin, every this one. And see, we might ask that if one person saves so much, what is the big difference it's going to make? You know, industries waste so much, and so much of waste in the corporate world. It's not that at all. From Swami's point of view, see, and that was the message which Swami was trying to tell all of us, is that we as individuals should be the least burden possible on Mother Earth. And as much as possible, give back even more than what we have taken. You know, that should be the, you know, motto of our life. But on the other hand, we're always thinking that it's okay, you compare it with people who waste more than you, and you kind of
justify your things
and you pat yourself on the back and say that, after all, I'm not so wasteful. But it's not like that. As much as possible, be the least burden you can be.
See, I think we are being hypocrites, Prem. See, when we go to a doctor and say, I'm not feeling well, imagine the doctor says, look at that, he has got 3 organs failing, you are well only, you go back home. No, my headache is the biggest problem in the world for me. You know, I want it solved. So when it comes to such things, we don't say, hey, yeah, I'm fine actually. We don't, right? So I feel we should not take it as a convenient philosophy, and therefore, if it was that individual effort is not important, why would Swami encourage individual effort? I feel that is where our faith comes in. Swami has encouraged us to put in individual effort. Why do I think how will it benefit the... It will not make a change in the world. That is where I feel, the spiritual part comes in. Because whenever we do anything, I don't think we should be doing it to see spiritual uplift of the world or the world becoming a better place. I think we do it because we have to do it. Like how Swami would say, a fire is hot. I mean, it's not that it's got a choice or anything. It's its dharma. Water is wet, it's its dharma. Like that, this is the dharma of humans. This is our dharma where, you know, we think in this manner. It is not cause-benefit analysis. So I feel that way, yeah, as you said, in these little things. Another thing I remember is, however tight the situation, see, we have gone through the Satyam Shivam Sundaram series. Even in the direst of need, even when there were people willing to help him, Swami never stretched out his hand to ask anything. He has never asked. He has always given. And it's amazing. Because if people say, if you don't ask, how will you receive? How will you ever be able to give if you yourself don't have? Well, Swami's life is an example. To show that if we have faith in that principle, if we really lead our life that way, we will never have to ask. And yet, it doesn't mean that because we are not asking, we are not being able to give. Because how much Swami has given? And He has never asked. I think these are some of the things that we can try to imbibe in our life at a physical level, so that we start following the footsteps of our Lord.
Absolutely. And if at all, any time Swami did ask, I think when He asked, it was more giving an opportunity than receiving anything from people. You know, I can imagine how much a person would have prayed before Swami would have probably given an opportunity for somebody to serve Swami in a certain way. And, you know, there's so many examples of devotees who prayed for 20 years, 15 years before Swami said, okay, do this for me. You know, so even when he was receiving, actually it was the person who was giving was receiving much, much, much more than what he was giving. And that's a lesson definitely for all of us.
You know, I'm very tempted to narrate in brief, because if I start narrating that whole experience and story, it might take away more than an hour. But you know, in brief, there was this. Recently, I was speaking to one gentleman, and he was speaking about how he offered a ruby necklace to Swami.
Oh.
In the darshan lines, he put it in a cover and he gave it to Swami. And after a lot of struggle, after intense prayer, Swami took it. And after stating that, he said, see, people think that many people give things to Swami. And then he went into his experience. Trust me, Prem, his life had not been saved once, twice or thrice, but more than 10 times. So much so that his life had gone to such an extent where he was in such danger. He broke down and he said, Swami, you know what, this is something that I cherish the most in my life. Because that ruby necklace was like that. Cherish the most means it is something that everybody considers valuable. But Swami, today I realize that all this is absolutely worthless. Only you are valuable, Swami. And this is such a valuable realization I have got, which is beneficial for me in my life journey. I want to offer this to you, Swami, but I don't think I'll be alive to offer this to you. He said, it was almost the case of the messenger vanishing once the message is learnt. The moment he learnt it, it's a 1 hour long story of how miraculous things happened, and he's even recounting it, he's filled with tears. And he said, when he came back, the first thing he wanted to do was, he just hoped and prayed and said, Swami, please give me this opportunity, because I have promised. Give me an opportunity to hold up my word. I have promised I want to give this to you, please accept it from me. It took him a week, but at the end of the week, he said he gave. And he said, even to this day, you know, even as he was narrating this, he had goosebumps, he had tears of joy, and he said, see, I am telling, I gave a necklace. But you see what Swami is giving? Years and years after that, even to this day, the tremendous joy that I get, I can never get even by owning 10 necklaces like that. So, only at a surface when people see, people think that Swami is receiving something from anybody. But whenever he has received, also, whenever it even appears that he has received, it's only to bless that devotee. And having received, he has given that devotee 100, 1,000, 1,000,000-fold. Because irrespective of whether the devotee gives or not, the Lord always gives 100, 1,000, 1,000,000-fold. So even if it is given, it is nothing. It is just that I'm offering back what belongs to him.
And going by the other things which we can, you know, physically learn from Swami, and I think even now, people who say that we have not seen Swami, we have not had Swami's darshan, even now you can learn from Swami when you see Swami's videos and all that, is the way Swami would interact with people, you know, the way Swami would speak. Doesn't matter who you are. You could be the prime minister, you could be a king, you could be a prince, you could be a pauper, you could be just, you know, the sweeper in the ashram, or whatever you could be. But the way Swami would speak to that person, you know, that soft and sweet manner in which Swami would speak. In fact, Swami himself would say, you know, there is this Sanskrit verse which says how a person should speak. You should be a mitabhashi, smitabhashi,
hitabhashi,
and priyamvada, Swami would say.
Okay.
Right. You know, where smitabhashi means you should speak with a smile. Mitabhashi means you should speak little, and priyamvada, you should speak lovingly. You know, Swami would tell that to students, and precisely that's what Swami would do. You know, the way Swami would speak, whatever is your problem, half the problem goes the way Swami would speak itself.
And the other thing is, just to speak pleasantly and make you smile, Swami would never indulge in anything false, untruth. That brings me to the other thing, you know, Swami would emphasize on unity in thought, word and deed. Manas ekam, vachas ekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam, Swami would say. And that is what he did all his physical sojourn, all his life. He has had that perfect harmony of thought, word and deed. And, you know, I remember this occasion where the student was sitting at Swami's feet, and Swami, it was a beautiful emotional conversation with Swami that he was having. During the course of that conversation, you know, he said, Swami, you are my everything. Other than you, I have nobody, Swami. And Swami said, really? He said, yes, Swami. Swami said, very happy. So it looked like Swami was very happy with him. And that was it, you know. That was an incident that had happened and it was over. A few weeks or possibly months later, this boy's parents came to Puttaparthi, you know. And since Swami was speaking to this boy, we know this concept of form boy. And we feel that if a form boy... parents come to Parthi, it's great, because they often end up with an interview. So this boy also just told Swami, my parents have come to Parthi. Immediately, you know, in an instant, without even a moment's difference, Swami's face became a little downcast. And this boy was wondering why. Swami told him, but you told me you have nobody other than me. And Swami turned and walked away. You know, how careful we have to be how in our thought, in our word and deed. You know, when Swami says unity in thought, word and deed, we just have to examine our own lives to realize, forget parents or friends. To Swami itself, how many things we tell him which we don't mean, how many things we think something, we speak something, we do totally a different thing, how many times we violate this? You know, it is innumerable. At least on my, from my angle, I can say, I have been guilty of this innumerable number of times. And when I actually sit contemplating on this, sometimes I get tears in my eyes, and I really, literally asked Swami, Swami, why do you love me like this? What is it that you see in me that you love me like this? Because I'm not worthy of this love. I know how many faults I have. But that is the nature of his love. But I feel that is another thing that we can learn. You know, physically Swami has every time demonstrated perfect harmony and purity of thought, word and deed.
It reminds me of what Swami had told once to a group of youngsters in the interview room. You know, Swami said, see, when I tell you, I will always hold your hand, I will always protect you and look after you, I mean it every bit. Okay? And I keep up my word. So when you come and tell me, Swami, you are my everything and I will do whatever you say, I believe you. Because, you know, because when I say I mean it, so I think that when you say also you mean it. Swami says, but I keep my side of the promise, but you know, most of you don't keep yours. I think that is where, when we say, Swami, I want to do Padasevanam to you, I want to do this. As you said, it's a prayer from our end. Swami, give us the opportunity to do Padasevanam. And that prayer is a commitment which we make that, Swami, we will follow whatever you say. And that is the other side of the equation which we miss out. And as we are talking right now, it's the physical aspects which we could learn from Swami. And the other thing, of course, we will have to say is Swami's habits, eating habits, or Swami, what Swami likes, what Swami did not like physically. And that is again what Swami has told himself, you know, physically, mentioned it so many times too, as we've played it many times before, I think, but definitely calls for hearing it as many times as possible and to listen to it and follow it. What Swami would say, that three things which I want if you wish to call yourself a Swami's devotee. Maybe we'll play that discourse clip again where Swami says this. This is again the discourse which Swami gave during his birthday celebrations in
1994.
Therefore, you should sacrifice non-vegetarianism, drinking and smoking today. Then once you sacrifice, the society will progress, you will be better. The main aim of Bhagavan is the
prosperity.
If you have full faith in Bhagavan's teachings, follow these three. Don't postpone saying tomorrow.
Yendukanaga?
Why?
Idi next anukuntunte adi poorthi test ga maaripothundi.
If you go on saying next, it becomes a test
ga maaripothundi.
Then it becomes taste.
Voddu.
No.
Ippude ee nimishamlam lekunanu aa sankalpanni meeru drudham chesukovali.
Right now itself determine.
Idi ee naadu mee nunchi nenu aashinchetunte yokka aasha.
This is expected by Bhagavan today from us.
Kanuka prema swaroopulaina tinte vaaru మీరు తప్పగా దీనిని ఆచరించి స్వామికి ఆనందాన్ని అందించి దేశానికి కుటుంబానికి కూడా సరైన ఆదర్శప్రాయులు అవుతారని నేను ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ నా ప్రసంగాన్ని విరమిస్తున్నాను.
భగవాన్ ఎక్స్పెక్ట్స్ దట్ వుడ్ ఫాలో దీస్ త్రీ థింగ్స్ మేక్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్ హ్యాపీ యువర్ ఫ్యామిలీ అండ్ ద కంట్రీ బై అండ్ లార్జ్ అండ్ బ్రింగ్స్ హిస్ డిస్కోర్స్ టు ఎ క్లోజ్.
వెల్ ఐ డోంట్ థింక్ వి నీడ్ టు ఫర్దర్ ఎలాబరేట్ ఆన్ దట్ ఎనీమోర్. ఇట్స్ very, very clear, crystal, clear as crystal about vegetarianism, non-smoking and non-alcoholism. You know, when the avatar comes in a physical frame, he takes on the limitations of that physical frame and behaves perfectly in accordance. You know, that is another thing we could observe, the way Swami interacted with the ladies, for instance. How perfect it was, that in itself is life lessons for us. How he would speak to them, how he would never take a woman alone in for an interview. It would always be with a group. Even in those circumstances when there was the need for privacy because that woman is suffering from some intense personal problem, he would always ensure that one very elderly senior lady is also present. You know, this is amazing. Who? Because when it is a Lord, why will anyone have reason to suspect? But this is Kali Yuga. And so Swami was such a Maryada Purushottama, the way he behaved. So he put on those limitations of the frame that he had chosen so perfectly. But because of that, you know, when we say footsteps, following in the footsteps of the Lord, we follow whatever he did. Possibly we don't know how a woman should behave, because Swami would not have behaved like a woman, you know, because he has taken a body of a man. Or how should a A doctor behave.
A married man behave.
A married man, yes. Yeah. Because these are not things that Swami did.
We can directly learn from Swami's actions. Right?
Yeah, we can't learn from his actions directly. So I think in those, for those cases, I think we can definitely go to his discourses. Because as I said, as we discussed, you know, Swami had perfect unity in thought, word and deed. So whether we follow his deed, or whether we follow his word, or whether we follow his thought, I think all the three are the same, because his is perfect unity in thought, word and deed. So I feel it's not only about seeing Swami's actions and following them, even hearing his discourses and following his teachings form part of Padasevanam.
Absolutely. I think that is why if you go back to Swami's discourses, the number of, the variety of people to whom Swami's discourses are addressed. And there was a discourse, I think, in Bombay when Swami went, Swami spoke to all the parliamentarians.
Hmm.
I mean, because Swami spoke to everybody, devotees too, but with a focus on parliamentarians and how, you know, they should give up corruption and how they should give up selfishness. There's so many discourses where Swami has gone to probably girls' schools and spoken. You know, we have those early 60s, early 50s, when Swami would go for a sports day of a school and Swami would speak to the girl students there. Swami would tell them what is expected of an Indian woman, what is expected in the society for a woman. And there are discourses where Swami has given MBA students. And Swami used to make that almost every week Swami used to go and speak to them. Swami would speak of, you know, when you become an entrepreneur, what should be your attitude? That attitude, you should serve society more than, you know, making use of the society to fill your pockets. That attitude difference which a businessman should have. Swami has spoken to scientists, Swami has spoken to so many people.
To farmers, weavers, right? Agricultural, you know, you name it. In fact, when you were speaking about students, I was reminded, I don't know, possibly it's not exactly on this theme, but it is so beautiful, because on one occasion, Swami called in the 12th standard boys and girls. They were passing out of school, and it is not a certainty that everyone will return to the institute. So Swami called both into the bhajan hall, and on the, yeah, so they were the boys on one side, girls on the other side, and Swami began to just speak to them. You know, it was almost translator free in the beginning, and later on the translator came in for the benefit of those who didn't understand Telugu. And on that occasion, you know, Swami was speaking, you know, I have, in my limited number of opportunities where I've seen, I have not seen Swami speak with so much of concern, love, and, you know, like, it was like one amongst us, you know. And I was taking the video there. So Swami said, see, now you will go, you will finish your college education, and then after that you have to get job. And Swami said, why is education, why am I educating my boys? Swami said like that. I'm educating my boys because I want them to become responsible people in society, take up jobs, do their jobs with all sincerity, and when they raise families, be proper support for the families, discharge their responsibility towards the family, and then discharge their responsibility towards the society. This is what Swami said. And then Swami asked, why am I educating my girls? Then Swami clearly said, I don't want you all to take up jobs. Swami said, I am educating you because you have the greatest responsibility of building future pillars of this country. It is a task which is much more valuable than earning money. You know, of course, in different personal interviews where there are exceptional cases, you know, where the husband has passed away, the wife is forced to fend financially, those are exceptional cases where Swami himself has advised on what has to be done. But in a general case, Swami said, the education of the boy is to support the family, the education of the girl is to build that family, and, you know, Swami said, it's a wrong thing to think that this is housework, it's menial. It is so invaluable. So what we need to today, in, means, you know, when they talk about feminism and empowering women, it's not about making them do everything that men do, but it's about building in that consciousness in society that what women do is equally, if not more valuable than what men do. Each empower them means give them value to what they do, and that is what Swami did. That is what Swami said. You know, I was very touched. I'm stating this because it has personal relevance for me. Though I was present in that interview, my wife, who is also Swami's student, was not present there physically during that interview. And just when, you know, the time came that we were expecting our child, spontaneously she just said, you know, I'm quitting a job, quitting her job. The job she was in was good. It was comfortable. She was finding expression for her skills and talents and abilities. And in fact, when she wanted to quit her job, the boss came and pleaded with her and even told her that any time in the next 5 years, any time you want to come back, please come back. So, in fact, the way that she was wanted at the job, I asked her, are you sure you want to leave? She said, yes. Why? Because what job I'm going to do today is far more valuable than that, which is building up a future citizen of the country. You know, when she said that, I had tears in my eyes because my heart went back to that day when Swami made this exact statement. And I felt, you know, this is true empowering of women. Swami was not a woman. Swami did not live a life like a woman to show the women how they should. But in his speaking itself, he has empowered women all around the world. And, you know, when you mentioned about Swami speaking to schoolgirls, this is what came to my mind, and I just thought I must share it here.
And, I mean, absolutely, to just extend that to the number of kind of people Swami has spoken to. There's a discourse which Swami gave, if I'm not wrong, it's in Bhadrachalam, you know, this famous Rama temple in Bhadrachalam. There Swami spoke to the devotees, and you know what is the tenor, the tone of the discourse which Swami gave? How a host should behave. Swami said, you are living in a city where you will have a lot of people coming in, pilgrims coming in. As hosts in a pilgrim city, how you should behave.
I think we should all see that, because we are all
hosts. Exactly. In fact, that's how I came across that discourse, and we shared it on the website once. Now, Swami is saying, when you are living in a place where a lot of people come for spiritual succor, how you should, you know, live with dignity, because you are having the opportunity to live in a place which people come seeking something. At the same time, how you should be all embracing and, you know, invite and make people feel at home when you're living in a place like that.
I think it is in that, was it in that discourse the other day we were discussing, where Swami told of how you should not try to cheat them,
Absolutely. Swami says in that discourse.
They come seeking succor.
Because the people who are listening were from all kinds of, you know, people who had shops there, people who were having their own businesses there, to
because,
all of them.
Because, you know, they come seeking succor and we make suckers out of them. You know, that's not right at all. So, coming back to our point, that when we say follow the footsteps of the Lord, it is not just what he did physically, it's also what he said. It's also what he said. You know, as I said, as we discussed, because it is not possible that Swami could have lived all the roles physically. But apart from this, you know, that is the deed level, the word level, the thought level. If we see the thought level of Swami, I mean the vision of the Lord, the vision with which Swami came, it's so simple, it's so straightforward, it's summed up in one sentence, it's not even a sentence like that as such. Swami says, I am I. It is Swami's avatarhood, if I may be bold, if I may make this bold venture to say, Swami's avatarhood can be summarized by the goal of making each individual realize the inherent divinity. And I feel, when we say we want to follow Swami's footsteps, we want to do Padasevanam, we definitely have to be pilgrims on this path of discovery of I am I, of the inherent divinity in ourselves and in everyone around us. I feel being on that path in itself is Padasevanam.
Absolutely. I mean, when any discourse of Swami we listen to, we know that that is the ultimate goal that Swami keeps for all of us. So obviously that the idea that, you know, that's what Swami expects of each one of us, to make that the ultimate goal. But apart from that, you know, apart from listening to Swami's discourses, many times I wonder this, you know, there are so many of Swami's devotees. Many of them are illiterate. Probably they don't understand English or Telugu. A lot of people come like that, you know, from North India, from villages, and even in the southern states, from Kerala. They don't understand any of the languages. They don't understand English. They don't understand Telugu. Probably they can't read other books in their own language. Does that mean that they can't, you know, have this Padasevanam towards Swami? Probably there are no avenue to know what Swami expects of them. I mean, what about devotees who come from Russia, who come from all these exotic places we've not
Latin
heard
American
of? Right.
Countries.
Even there, they are devotees. And that's what Swami says. You know, many times you don't even have to know what Swami has told in his discourses. when you say that thought, word and deed, you can follow Swami's deeds, you can follow Swami's words. When you say you can follow Swami's thought, I think it also means when you think of Swami, you will absolutely be certainly sure what Swami wants and what Swami does not want. When you're in a situation, I think it's so easy to, that's why they say it is impossible to separate God from goodness. Mm. When you think of God, your action will automatically be goodness. Your words will automatically be goodness. And that's why keep Swami in mind and do what you feel Swami would expect me to do. I think that's equally Padasevanam too.
Absolutely. You know, when you were saying good and God and goodness can't be separated, my mind, you know, it meandered and wandered towards our epics where we have so many of these rakshasas, demons seeking boons. I was just thinking, see, when they're focused only on the Lord, that is when they do their penance and then they ask their boons. See, the Lord's love is such that when your focus is the Lord, whatever you wish you will get, even some crazy boon such as nobody can kill me, this car, you know, all such kind of things. But you see, afterwards, what leads to their destruction? The same people who had worshipped the Lord to get the boon start hating the Lord and, you know, criticizing the Lord. So, you know, they become hateful of the Lord. So it is love for the Lord that gives them everything that they want. It is hate for the Lord that makes them lose everything that they have had. So, as you said, just thinking of the Lord with love and devotion is in itself Padasevanam, because I feel after that it's an inward journey where it's you need not read spirituality from books. I remember reading somewhere that a master was saying that just spirituality is not about finding answers. It's not about knowing, because if you want to know, at the end of a math textbook there are all the answers that you need to know. And they are also right, they are also correct. But unless you solve the problem yourself, in whatever way you solve it and get the answer, you will not become a mathematician. In the same way, how much ever we may read and listen to Swami's discourse, unless we have based our spirituality on our own experience and our own connect with the Lord, we will not be gaining much. We will only become answer guides or possibly parrots parroting what we have heard. So, therefore, spirituality is very, very broad-based. It's open to everyone. Everyone can indulge in Padasevanam. And to start off that, yes, Smaranam. That's why I think possibly Vishnu Smaranam has been placed before Padasevanam.
Yeah, that, I mean, very true. In fact, in Ajit Popat sir, when he would speak, he would tell that once Swami had told him in an interview, you know, Swami would often say, no, I am not an animal, I am a man. Swami would say, take it one step further. Say, I am not an animal, I am a man. I am a Sai devotee. You know, when you think that I am a devotee of Swami, I want to qualify myself as a devotee of Swami. As you said, the answers might be different. The answer you get when you say that, what should I do to be a Sai devotee, might be different from what I get when I ask the same question. But the important thing is to ask. I think that is the quality of Padasevanam, where you say, I am in love with the Lord, I want to know what to do now, right? You know, I've heard of Him, I've spoken about Him, I'm so lost in Him, I'm thinking about Him all the time, but I also want to know what I should do. That's what Swami would say, you know, when the food starts permeating into your body, that's when the food has its value. Now you have loved the Lord, that love should permeate all through your body and you should express
your actions,
words and deeds. And that, I think, is what Padasevanam is, what Swami is asking us to dwell upon.
Till now we have come with two insightful interpretations of Padasevanam. One being intensely pining for that. The second being following in the footsteps of the Lord. And following the footsteps can come at a physical level where Swami has demonstrated things. At a verbal level where through discourses Swami has given us advice. And at the spiritual level where we have experienced that divinity. There is one final interpretation that has been inspired by Swami's discourses and our mananam. But I think, dear listeners, before we go into that, we will take a little break. Enjoy this song, on the other side of which we will continue with another beautiful way in which we all can indulge in Padasevanam.
Ah, చరణ కమల బందో హరి రాయ చరణ కమల బందో హరి రాయ జాకి కృపా పంగుం గిరిలాంధే జాకి కృపా పంగుం గిరిలాంధే అంధే కో సబ్ కుచ్ దర్శావే చరణ కమల బందో హరి రాయ చరణ కమల బందో హరి రాయ బహిరు సునే గుంగా పుని బోలే రంక చలే ధర ధరాయి బహిరు
is such prem that, you know, after listening to that I don't feel like speaking only. So beautiful.
It's so difficult to speak after such a beautiful rendition.
Really. In order to make it easier to speak, I think the best way would be to start quoting Swami. That's the only thing that is sweet, if not sweeter than that. On the 30th of July 1996, you know, Swami said this. I just read it out. All are manifestations of the divine. You may ask whether you can ever acquire the powers that are possessed by Swami. Follow me. You are bound to get that power. The power is latent in you, but you are not aware of it. You want to experience bliss. If you truly follow Swami, you will discover that bliss within you. So you see, I mean, it is so clear that what we spoke of Swami's thought, that is, I am I, that is the goal. And in order to do that, Pada Sevanam is the path, because we have to follow Swami. And we may often think, you know, where do we begin? That's what happens. When now we are inspired, we are ready, but where do we begin? What do I start following? Because there's so many things that Swami has said. I am just reminded of that Chinnakatha where there is this person who is a thief actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to his guru with the same thing, the same question that, Guru, I'm a thief, I'm not a special guy. Do I have chance of redemption? He says, Guru says, yes. I don't know where to begin, what should I follow? He says, no, follow any one thing, any one good thing that you have heard. So this thief decides that he will be honest. And this is what Swami has narrated as a Chinnakatha. He goes and one night when he is robbing, he decides to rob the treasury, royal treasury. He finds another thief,
mm-hmm.
which unknown to him is actually the king in disguise. And they both commit the robbery, after which the king who is in disguise of the thief slowly starts telling him that, you know, I think I know a place where the diamonds are kept, the best diamonds. We can pick those diamonds. So this is the way the king wins the trust of the thief and slowly gets out from him his address, where he stays, everything. This is the king's ploy to catch the thief. The thief divulges all that, and when they open that safe, there are three huge diamonds. And the king says, the king in the disguise of the thief, yeah, he says, how do we divide this? He says, you take one, I'll take one. And you know, Papam, the king, he is losing everything. We'll leave one for him. They leave behind one and go. The next day, there is news of this royal burglary. And the king summons his minister and sends him to the treasury. The minister comes back and says, Lord, the treasury is cleaned out. There's nothing left. And the king immediately knows that something fishy, because in his presence one diamond was left behind. He gives the address of the thief and the thief is summoned. And the king tells, tell me what you did last night. Because this thief has taken the vow of honesty, he confesses everything that he has done, including the part that I left behind, one for you, O king. That is how the minister gets caught. And in an unusual turn of events, the minister is jailed. And this thief is made minister. That's what Swami narrates. And he says once he became minister, he feels the uselessness of his old ways and one by one gives up all his bad habits till he becomes a very respected and wonderful person. So too, you know, so drawing inspiration from this Chinnakatha, when we want to start following Swami, there's nothing like where to begin, where to end. Begin wherever you wish. Start, but hold on steadfastly to that and then proceed.
Right. And going to the other interpretation which we said about Padasevanam, again, it's not our interpretation, it's definitely Swami's. And in fact, as early as 79, if I'm not wrong, in a discourse, Swami beautifully speaks about the verse in Purusha Suktam, you know, because sadly we don't have the clip with us. Swami explains the Purusha Suktam. There is that part in Purusha Suktam where it describes about the Varna system, you know, the different caste system in the ancient days where you have the Brahmins, the Vaishyas, the Shudras. And by saying that how all of them together constitute the Virata Swarupa of the Lord, you know, the supreme form of the Lord, where it says the Brahmins form the face of that Purusha, the Kshatriyas form the shoulders and the arms of the Purusha, the Vaishyas form the waist, the thighs, and you know, that part where the entire body stands. And then the Shudras represent the feet, right? And Swami beautifully, you know, of course, a lot of nice things what Swami says. He says, when you invite a guest, you can't tell, come, no, let only the head come. I don't want the feet, I want only the head. Because feet is not considered so holy or as special as the head. When you invite somebody, you invite everybody together. Similarly, when you worship the Lord, you worship all of this. And then Swami goes on to say, so, and when you want to worship the Lord, you worship the feet. So if you wish to offer worship to the feet, you have to look for the downtrodden in the society and then offer service to them as worship. That is the truest form of Padaseva, Swami says.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. In fact, when you said that, just yesterday, you know, tomorrow is Ugadi. You know, I think we can take this occasion to also wish all our listeners in advance for a wonderful Ugadi. And because for Ugadi we have a discourse, I was listening through some Ugadi discourse of Swami to take a relevant portion to be played in Kulwant Hall tomorrow. I was listening to the discourse that Swami delivered on Ugadi in the year 2002.
Okay.
And in that, in the middle, Swami makes reference to this very thing. Swami says, ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ సర్వత పాణిపాదం తత్సర్వతోక్షి శిరోముఖం సర్వత శృతిమల్లోకే సర్వం ఆవృత్య తిష్టతి. ఇట్ మీన్స్ దట్ ద లార్డ్ హ్యాస్ హిస్ ఇయర్స్ ఎవ్రీవేర్, హిస్ హ్యాండ్స్ ఎవ్రీవేర్, హిస్ హెడ్స్ ఎవ్రీవేర్ హీ హ్యాస్. అండ్ దెన్ స్వామి కోట్స్ ది పురుష సూక్తం సేయింగ్ సహస్ర శీర్ష పురుష సహస్రాక్ష సహస్రపాత్, మీన్స్ ద లార్డ్ హ్యాస్ అ థౌసండ్ హెడ్స్ అ థౌసండ్ ఐస్. అండ్ స్వామి సేస్ వాట్ ఈస్ ద ట్రూ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్. ద ట్రూ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ ఈస్ నాట్ దట్ ద లార్డ్ ఇస్ అ మ్యూజియం పీస్. Of course, Swami doesn't use the word museum piece, but Swami says it means that any head that you see around, any eye that you see around, any hand that you see around, in short, anything, any living being that you see around is the Virata Swarupa of the Lord. Go, if you want to serve the Lord, serve that being, serve. And what you quoted was so beautiful, because in serving beings also, Swami says, equivalent to worshipping the feet of the Lord, were serve those who are downtrodden. Here I have I think it was the 22nd of September 1968 possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, I'm sorry. This is the 30th of July 1996, the same discourse that I quoted.
Okay.
There Swami says, if you want to truly follow Swami, discover the bliss within you. Then Swami goes on to say, know that my feet are everywhere, sarvata panipadam. All hands and feet are His. That is what is said in the Purusha Sukta. Sahasra Shirisha Purushaha Sahasrakya Sahasrapad. The mantra also says, Sarva Deva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigachati. The homage that you pay to all the gods flow to the one only. Swami then says, I want to elaborate it and further give you a new mantra. Remember, Sarva Jeeva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigachati. Swami says, Sarva Deva Namaskaram means the homage that you pay to any god,
form of god, right?
Any form of god goes to the same god. Swami says, I am changing it. The mantra is Sarva Jeeva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigachati, which means the salutations and service that you offer to any living being goes to the same Lord.
Beautiful. In fact, we had spoken about this when we were doing that letter of Swami, you know, which Swami had written in 1947 to his brother.
That historic letter.
That very, very beautiful poem which Swami writes in that. You know, what do I like? What is my mission? Swami says. In that Swami says, you know, I might not get the Telugu exactly, but Swami says that, be the sadhalakaina penubad tolikinchi, Lemini bapute premanaku, Swami says. You know, he says, to do this is what I love. You know, when you invite Swami home, or let's say you had that opportunity to have Swami physically come and dine at your place, you would often ask, you know, what is Swami love? I want to do what Swami likes. It's not like what I am good at. You know, these are the things I am best at. It's not that. What is Swami relish? I want to do that.
Hmm.
And that's why Swami says, you know, to give solace to people who are suffering, to give people who need and to help them, that is what I love. So if you want to do what I love, this is what you have to do.
And just as a little aside, you know, when Swami had been to Hadshi, that is what apparently thrilled him a lot. Because when he sat at the table to dine, he was served rasam.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, wow, you know, it was literally like a child. Wow, we have got rasam here. I thought I will get only chapatis. Wow, you made rasam. And what you said was precisely what the host said. They said, Swami, you like rasam, so we made rasam. Swami was so touched with their
in fact,
feeling.
You know, just extending that same thing, you're talking about the rasam which was served. What made Swami even more happy during that trip was when he got to know that all the devotees who had come for darshan in Hadshi were being served lunch.
Absolutely.
When Swami heard that, you know, he knew that the host had nailed it. You know, they really did exactly what Swami loved.
In fact, Prem, going further on what he said, because when Swami was having this, then they say, having lunch, they told Swami, Swami, there is a farmhouse nearby,
mm-hmm.
Which is very close by. In the car we can go, Swami. If Swami is kind enough to come there and bless that building, we will be grateful.
Okay.
Swami was hesitant, you know. And then they said, Swami, along the way only these sheds are there where, you know, these shamyanas have been erected where devotees are being fed.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, oh, is it? Then let us go. You know, because it is very, very clear. You please the devotees, you thrill the devotees, you touch the devotee's heart, you touch the Lord's heart. Because what the devotee enjoys is nothing short of the Lord himself enjoying. So again, once again, the Jadav brothers who had organized this visit, they nailed it on the head, because they hit the nail on the head, because when they said that, Swami, on the way there only is all are all these devotees being fed, Swami was very eager to go. So you see, when you actually serve the people, serve the devotees, and especially serve the downtrodden, the feet of the Lord, it becomes Pada Sevanam. Isn't that the reason why we have that beautiful bhajan? Dina Dukhiyon Se Prem Karo, Mera Sai Prasanna Hoga.
And absolutely, you know, what a beautiful bhajan. It's precisely, this is what we were saying, you know, when you say that you've heard about the Lord, fallen in love with Him. So the next thing is, what does the Lord want me to do? What does the Lord love? What will make Swami happy? And I want to do that. And I mean, it's not a ordinary coincidence that we're talking about this today, because as we all know, the organization has decided to celebrate this month, you know, from March to a little 3 days ahead of the Aradhana Mahotsav, as the month of giving and forgiving. They want to do that every year. And your mind just goes back to that time, you know, when Swami's body was lying in state, those 3 days, how spontaneously the people of this village and around came to that occasion to serve all those people, because that line which was standing to have Swami's darshan was going all over the village, you know, all around the place. Automatically, nobody asked for that. Shamianas were put up because people are standing in this hot summer, you know, how hot it is in this month. And, you know, people started serving water, people started serving food, unasked for. You know, this was not organized by the trust, this was not organized by the ashram.
Organized by any organization.
Right, just the people in the village started doing this. And, I mean, it was such a heartening thing, because this is exactly what Swami would want us to do any day. And it's so beautiful that we're talking about this form of Padasevanam in this month of giving and forgiving. It's precisely what Swami wants all of us to do.
Just one technical doubt, Prem. I just got this doubt, thinking that, see, we are talking about now with the bhakti. Bhakti. Bhakti is one form. You know, we have the three paths. We say bhakti, karma, jnana. We are talking of bhakti. And by speaking about seva, I just felt that we are treading into the karma zone, you know, the karma marga kind of zone. So beautiful are Swami's discourses. They, you know, they hold the answers to everything in the universe. You call it coincidence? No, you can't call it coincidence, because right when I was thinking like this, I land up with a discourse which Swami delivered on the 22nd of September 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And in reply to this question as to when we talk of seva, is it not karma, but this is about bhakti, are we mixing up, are we fudging the two? In that discourse, Swami says, seva or service is bhakti towards the Lord as the Vishwa Virata Swarupa. Seva is the adoration of the Lord as the Vishwa Virata Swarupa, as having the multifaceted form, multifaced form, and immanence in the entire universe. So when you worship the, when you have bhakti towards the Virata Swarupa of the Lord, it becomes seva. Such a beautiful definition, because, you know, it gives us a new perspective. Many of us say we love God, we want to worship the Lord, we want to do things for Swami, but we are not ready to work for our own family, we are not ready to work for society, we are not ready to work for nature. We have this disconnect where we separate God and we separate nature, society and family. We say that, see, what is happening in some other country, some people are dying. See, that's what we can do. Yeah, maybe we'll say a prayer. Why should I bother? I'm here for my liberation. I'm here for my connection with my Lord. That's a disconnect with the Lord, because the Lord is not a separate entity. The Lord, as he said, Sarvata Panipadam, the Vishwa Virata Swarupa of the Lord, is the Lord being present everywhere, in all nature, in all society, in all beings. And therefore, if we have to do true Pada Seva, we have to do Samaj Seva, we have to do Srishti Seva, then only we will be able to do Sai Seva.
And, you know, when you talk about that quote, beautiful, Swami says that, worshipping the Lord in His Vishwa Virata Swarupa is nothing but seva, and there is no difference between bhakti and seva. It reminds me of that experience which Brother Satyajit was sharing once, you know, where Swami took him for a drive one day. He was in the car all alone with Swami, and suddenly Swami looked at him and asked him something like, what do you want to see? Right? And Swami said, which form of God do you want to see? Okay, it was an offer for having a special darshan, you know. Do you want to see Rama? Do you want to see Krishna? Do you want to see Shiva? Which God do you want to see? And, you know, that's often a trick question. Because if you answer any of these forms, which means you're saying that you have a preference for any one particular form, when you have Swami sitting in front of you, right? So it's a loyalty issue at that time. So, you know, he says that he gave a very smart answer. He said, Swami, I would like to see Vishwarupam.
Wow, that's like I want to see everything.
All in one, you know. So you're not picking any one particular form and getting into trouble. He said, Swami, I would like to see Vishwarupam. And he was happy within himself that he had given a smart answer. Swami said, you want to see Vishwarupam? And I don't know exactly the details, but apparently when Swami was going for the drive, we all know how, you know, people are on either side of the road. Swami said, Deko, look around. And these hundreds of devotees were standing. Swami said, yeah, see, this is only God's Vishwarupam. And Swami said, you see it every day, but you don't understand. And precisely when Swami says, you know, this is Vishwarupam, and I mean, there is no better way of saying that this is what is Seva, and this is what is Padaseva.
You know, the Lord comes on the planet possibly just to draw attention, because as you said, what we see in everyday life, we forget to realize its value. I'm reminded of that incident where when a bunch of students got so excited when they were traveling with Swami. When you're traveling with Swami, it's always excitement. Traveling with Swami in the Bandipur forest, when they were so excited, because Swami said, now you will see elephant, and they were all trying to search for the elephant. They couldn't find it. Suddenly one boy sees there's a tail of the elephant moving. He says, yeah, I see the elephant, I see the elephant. He had actually seen only the tail of the elephant. And then others also tried to spot and say, ah, yes, now I also see it. Yes, yes, yes. Swami, we see the elephant. They were also excited. That is when Swami, you know, told them, see, seeing the tail of an elephant, you're getting so excited. Bang opposite to your hostel, there is Sai Gita, the whole elephant. But how many of you look at Sai Gita as you go to your college with this excitement? That's what happens when things become normal, when things become familiar, we forget. So the problem with us is that we forget this Vishwarupam of the Lord. As Swami pointed out to Brother Satyajit, we forget the Vishwarupam of the Lord that is all around, and we go to some corner, some place seeking God. God is not exclusivity at all. God is always all-inclusive, and therefore the best place to start searching for the Lord, searching for the feet of the Lord, is right within us, here and now.
And even as we're concluding this week's episode, whatever we've spoken so far in this Navaveda Bhakti series, Swami puts it in one sentence, right? In one quote of Swami, this journey from, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam to Padasevanam, leading right up to, as you said, you know, keeping in sync with what Swami thinks, the way Swami thinks, like Swami thinks only in the level of oneness. Swami would say, the journey of every devotee who comes to Swami should be this way. From Chamatkar to Sanskar, from Sanskar to Paropkar, and Paropkar to Sakshatkar.
Now, Prem, go again word by word. I will give translation for our listeners.
Right. Swami says you start with Chamatkar,
which is miracles.
Miracles. To Sanskar,
which is culturing yourself.
Right. And Sanskar to Paropkar.
Paropkar meaning helping others, serving others.
And Paropkar to Sakshatkar.
Sakshatkar is the ultimate merger.
Okay. Now you look at it. Chamatkar is miracle, but it's the glory of the Lord. You know, what really thrills you. When you talk about Shravanam, Kirtanam, we spoke about that. You know, what stands out about the Lord? You know, he can do this, he cured that, and he materialized this, and Swami did this, and Swami appeared here, Swami appeared there. All of that is Swami's Chamatkar, where you listen and you share, and that's Shravanam and Kirtanam. And then when you say Sanskar, that's precisely what we said, you know, following the footsteps of the Lord. When you follow the footsteps of the Lord, what do you...
We culture ourselves.
You culture yourself, you know. That's why we said God and goodness cannot be separated. You begin this process of Sanskar, and then Swami says what we spoke of for the last half an hour, Paropkar, which is nothing but Seva. When you get into that real desire to love God and express that love, automatically it will express itself as Paropkar, or loving God through others. And eventually that will lead you to this ultimate goal which we spoke of, Sakshatkar.
With that, dear listeners, we draw curtains on this theme of Padasevanam. We know that we have not been comprehensive. We can never be. We have just shared what Swami inspired in our hearts, and we offer this back to Swami at His lotus feet. We offer Padasevanam as our Padasevanam to him. We pray that Bhagwan is happy with this effort. And as always, dear listeners, your feedback is welcome. Your thoughts are welcome. Wherever relevant, wherever possible, whenever possible, we will try to share them over the air so that this becomes a true satsang and not just two people speaking. With that, we conclude this with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
提出